This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. On a Monday, it is great to be with you. And I'm so glad to see the decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court today, both on the Trump travel restriction on travel by people coming here from six largely Muslim countries around the world, and the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court does see the authority of this president, or frankly, any president, to impose such a restriction. And remember, the restriction is at most 4 months, and in many of the cases inside that travel order, it only restricts travel for 90 days. So while most of the media has been spending a lot of time pointing out, well, the Supreme Court's going to take this back up in the fall when the Supreme Court begins meeting again on the first Monday in October. Yes, that's right, but that's more than 4 months from now. In other words, it's a longer period of time than the period of the travel restriction, and that's all that it is. So, in tonight's quick poll, I'm asking you this. Was the Supreme Court right to reinstate President Trump's temporary travel ban from six largely Muslim countries? I would say yes, they were right to do it. Now, they didn't get into some of the weedier issues that are going on inside that travel restriction, but the fact is they have reasserted the president's authority, both constitutional and statutory, to do exactly what he did, to say that America has to be protected and that if we can't vet people coming in from those six countries, including Syria and Iran, then they should not be allowed into our country until we can do that. Today is a big win for one of President Trump's executive orders, as the Supreme Court at least partially reinstated the travel restriction, a step in the right direction for securing our borders and making our country safer from countries that house and, in some cases, openly support radical terrorists. And more decisions from the Supreme Court, a ruling that religious organizations are allowed to obtain grant funding from states. You'll actually get a kick out of the specific case they're talking about. It has to do with whether or not federal money can be used to take recycled tires and resurface the playgrounds at a daycare center. That's what they're actually talking about. And imagine this, in a country that says the government is not allowed to discriminate against you because of your religious beliefs, the thinking of the opponents in this case was that if any other organization, say the Red Cross or some local school, decided that it wanted to have one of those grants to be able to resurface a playground with recycled rubber tires so the little kids wouldn't get hurt as badly when they fall down, you could have it, as long as you weren't religious. Well, you see, if you think about the whole point of the First Amendment that says the government can't say this is okay for anyone unless, of course, you have religious beliefs, in which case, no soup for you, you would think that even a non-lawyer, a non-judge would be able to look at that and say, that crosses the First Amendment boundary, doesn't it? It's the government saying, you can have this grant. Oh, I'm sorry, you're part of a religious group that's providing daycare? No, then in that case, you can't have the recycled tire playground surface grant because you follow a religion. Well, isn't that crazy? So we'll talk about that tonight as well. My good friend, comrade Juan Williams, yes, he's a lefty from Fox News, is going to join me to talk about why he thinks that Donald Trump is filling the swamp instead of draining the swamp. And as if flying weren't stressful enough, one woman had money stolen from her suitcase by an employee who works for the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. Aren't those the folks who are supposed to keep us safe at the airport? And by the way, cast your vote in my quick poll at LarsLarson.com. You'll find it at the website. And while you're there, check out the new trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure for a chance to win some fantastic prizes. You know, I got some great news over the weekend. I went to give a speech to a GOP group. It was a Lincoln Day dinner, and I'm invited to those from time to time. And when I got home, I checked my text messages, and I found out that I've drawn a branch bull tag for elk hunting this fall. So Of course, even though it was hot in my neck of the woods, that was some fantastic good news. You don't get those very often, and when you do, you want to take full advantage of them. Tonight's Quick Poll is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, the kind of conservative values that I subscribe to. I joined the group a long time ago, and I'd like you to join as well. Just go to amac.us, not .com. That's amac.us. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. And to heck with AARP. Just remember, those are the folks who helped pass Obamacare and why we're having so many problems with it today. Now, about that case involving public funds, I find it's better if you can actually pay attention to the details on a case like this. This was a 7-2 ruling, so the liberal side didn't really have a chance in this. The court sided with Trinity Lutheran Church because Trinity Lutheran Church in the state of Missouri had applied for a grant. It's a state program that reimburses nonprofit organizations if they go out and resurface the playgrounds for the little kids with recycled rubber tires. Now, you'd think the left-wingers would love this. Daycare, they love that. Recycling tires, they love that. Keeping little kids from getting hurt when they fall down on the playground, they love that. And they had a state program to do that. Now, in a perfect world, you wouldn't have to have state or federal programs that hand out money to do common sense things like putting down recycled rubber tires on a playground surface. But since they do, if the argument is that if you're a nonprofit with no religious background at all, you can get the grant, but if you're a nonprofit backed up by a church, then you're not allowed to get the grant. Again, I thought this was an easy call. The Supreme Court ruling today that states cannot exclude organizations simply because they're religious when they're handing out grant funding for state programs when the money is used for a non-religious purpose. Now, I suppose you might read some kind of religious purpose into playing on the monkey bars or falling on a playground or playing tag, but for the most part, I would say that playground activities are not religious activities. The court said the state's policy violated the rights of Trinity Lutheran under the First Amendment's Free Exercise Clause by denying the church an otherwise available public benefit on account of its religious status. Finally, we have a court, and finally, we have a federal government that actually believes in honoring people's background, religious or otherwise. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court is set to issue final rulings. There is an indication. We've already seen one new justice on the Supreme Court to replace Antonin Scalia, and that was Neil Gorsuch. Now there are indications, no firm indications, nothing guaranteed, but Anthony Kennedy, who's 81 years old, that he may step down. Some of his law clerks have said he is considering doing it. Any announcement would come after the court is done, finally issuing its final rulings today. If Kennedy were to retire, President Trump would have an historic opportunity to recast the court in a more conservative posture, possibly for decades to come. He's already appointed one conservative justice. I prefer to think of him as a constitutionalist justice, Neil Gorsuch. But Gorsuch replaced a conservative in a similar mode, whereas Kennedy has been a swing vote for the last decade. That is, sometimes he votes liberal, sometimes he votes conservative. Kennedy has sided with the court's four liberals on some major issues. Imagine, Donald Trump gets to replace him. And then I think there's a fairly good shot that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is a little past her expiration date, she is a woman who has taken some of the craziest positions, liberal positions on that court. She's the woman who not long ago was advocating that America's Constitution would be better if it were modeled after the South African Constitution. And she takes an internationalist view that somehow the Supreme Courts or the operations of other governments around the world would be a better model for America than the model that was set almost a quarter of a millennia ago. Coming up in a moment, we'll talk to Juan Williams from Fox News about why he argues that Donald Trump is filling the swamp and not emptying it.
They call him Comrade Juan because it's cool. A contributing writer for Fox News, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Post, The New York Times, and a hardcore Democrat. He is Juan Williams on the Lars Larson Show.
That's right, he is, and I'm proud to call him my friend, although he's wrong about almost everything when it comes to public policy. How are you doing, Juan?
I'm well. How are you, Lars? Enjoying the good weather?
Boy, it has been blistering hot in my neck of the woods. It hit, I think, 102 yesterday, which is uncharacteristic for us. I'm sure somebody's going to blame that on global warming, but I call it weather because I'm sure that we have cold summers, we have warm summers, but anytime it's warm, it's...
I know you're on the defensive here, but let me just say, nobody is going to look at one specific weekend and say that's global warming, but when you look at the patterns over the decades and the centuries, then you say, yeah, maybe we got something going on. But you know what, Lars? I went to a wedding this weekend outside of San Francisco, and it was cold. I would say it was in the 50s at some point. I was like, oh, my God, this summer in San Francisco is a crazy idea.
That's kind of a cheat, isn't it, that somebody like Nancy Pelosi really deserves some global warming? She should get more more of it in her
you
neck of the woods.
You can't help yourself. You I just like to beat up Nancy Pelosi.
She's crazy. Don't you Democrats want to get rid of her? Isn't she being told the door's over here, time for you to leave?
Well, it's obvious. I think that, you know, Tim Ryan, the congressman from Ohio, ran against her. You saw that kind of language increase after the fourth defeat that Democrats suffered in these special elections. But you know what? I think even if they had an election today, Nancy Pelosi would win. And you probably think, well, why is that? Because Republicans all demonize Nancy Pelosi. But guess what? She's been a very effective leader for the Democrats in Congress.
Yeah. Well, I think it says more about Democrats than it does about Nancy Pelosi. I think it suggests that you don't have a plan going forward because you lost last November, and you're kind of like a big ship without a rudder out there these days, the Democrat Party.
Well, you know, before you take your shots, don't check. Make sure you're not in a glass house because you remember Paul Ryan was nobody's pick, right?
I'm not
remember,
a fan of Paul.
You're very critical of Paul Ryan.
I wanted him replaced.
Okay. I just want to remind you, because you're my friend, I want to do it very gently, but I just want to remind you, don't get caught, you know, in a glass house.
Okay, fair enough. I'll take that. By the way, some nice wins at the Supreme Court today, huh?
Big for Trump. I don't understand the one on the immigration ruling.
Why not? It's easy.
Well, because
he has the authority.
First of all, it was unanimous. I think that was what was surprising to me in particular. Because I am concerned about the whole notion of making a decision on the basis of someone's religion, which I think is contrary to our very Constitution.
Does that travel restriction mention religion, or does it only mention specific countries?
It mentions specific countries, but remember, the prior courts had included what the president himself had said was the original intent, which was a Muslim ban.
Well, I got to tell you something. I think taking into account his comments during a campaign, if you use that on any other politician and said, well, Nancy Pelosi has introduced this bill and it doesn't say anything like what we're suggesting it does. But during the campaign, she said some things. So we're going to read that in. I think that's a little bit of a stretch, don't you?
Well, the thing is you have people like Rudy Giuliani who came on Fox and others who said, we were consulted about how to make the Muslim ban acceptable before the courts. And so we took out mention. And you say, wait a second. So this is not an assumption being made by the critics. This is something that his friends and his advisors are admitting quite openly.
Well, in case you haven't noticed, the vast majority of terrorist activity for the last 50 years or so has been committed by people in the name of Islam. So the fact that out of the 58 Muslim countries on earth, six of them are restricted, you got a thin argument for saying it's a Muslim ban. If it was a Muslim ban, there'd be 58 countries on the list, wouldn't there?
Well, you know what? I think that he has highlighted those specific countries in a way that is not about the threat level, because he's a member also going after refugees who are vetted for 2 years. And what he said specifically, Lars, is we want time, I think it was 90 days, to review our vetting process, make sure that it's sufficiently stringent.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It's far more than 90 days. He never did it. It seems to me to all be like, you know, one big charade, a fraud.
Well, Juan, I'm going to tell you that I think, and you make a reasonable argument, but I think it is impossible to vet some of the people from some of those countries. For example, if you want to vet somebody from Iran, How much information that's real information are we likely to get from the nation of Iran? And should we trust the information we get from Iran? How much information about an individual? If Juan Williams made his home in Syria and we called the Syrian government up because they'd be so anxious to cooperate with the United States of America and said, we'd like to know more about Juan. What do you have in your files on him? What are we likely to learn that's actually legitimate information about Syrian resident Juan Williams? I would think.
Well, you're quite correct, but that's not the way the U.S. government does it. I mean, we put people in refugee camps. We chart, or I guess that's what you would say, chart, you know, family structure, family units, associates. They look back at everything, including cell phone and telephone records, mail records, the whole deal, employment records. And by the way, Lars, very few of them are men. Most of these refugees are women and children. So that's how strict it is now. But again, that was the basis on which Trump said he wants this ban. So that's why I'm a little surprised by the court and very surprised that it was unanimous.
See, the reason I'm not surprised it was unanimous is a lot of us made the argument from the beginning, whether you like the restriction, the temporary restriction or not, he has the authority to do it. And we pointed out to established law, 70 years of established law, and the established constitutional law, and we said, you don't have to like it, but he has the authority. And I think that's what the court said. The court said, he has the authority to do this. If you don't like it, then take the legitimate actions through the constitutional process to object to it. But he does have the authority. And it was only, you know, crazies like the Ninth Circus Court that decided, we don't care if he's got the authority or not, we don't like it. I do want to ask you about this column you wrote, that you think that Donald Trump is not draining the swamp, but filling the swamp. And you're basing it on the fact that he owns a hotel in Washington, D.C. in part?
Oh, my gosh. Lars, you got to be fair when I come on the show now. I mean, it's not just me. First of all, there was a Monmouth poll last month found 32% of Americans say he's actually making the swamp worse. I think it was like about the same amount, maybe a little higher, 35 or so, that say he's done nothing, zero, to change the swamp. So, it's not even close. And I think there's about a quarter of Americans who say, oh, yeah, he's making some progress on draining the swamp. But it's Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's Jason Chaffetz, who has been so tough as head of the chairman, I should say, of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, so tough on Obama, on Hillary Clinton. These guys are saying this is worse than Obama. I believe that what Chaffetz said was he doesn't see any difference between Trump and Obama.
It was a good quote, and it's a good source. But
well, that's what I'm saying, because Chaffetz has credibility on your side of the aisle because he was so tough on Clinton and Obama, Benghazi and Fast and Furious and all the rest, and Grassley is a Trump guy. So here they are saying, you know what, this is not about transparency. This is about an authoritarian who's, in fact, less transparent than the guy we were so critical of, Barack Obama.
See, I don't think that's necessarily true, because at least this president is running the changes through the statutory process. He's not doing it through executive orders, and that's always more transparent than when you run things through executive orders that should be going through the Congress. And you've got to give him that.
Well, no, because it's all small ball, and what he's doing is going at undoing things. So he's, through regulatory changes that he's doing in executive fashion, simply canceling out things that he doesn't like.
And that America doesn't like. I mean, look,
well,
look.
I don't know about
America doesn't
like. I think environmental concerns, very popular.
Very popular. But
how about Wall Street? Wall Street's not exactly the most favorite, you know, subject in America. A lot of people think the rich are getting away with murder.
You got to read his whole column. It's in The Hill. He is Juan Williams. And Juan, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks so much, Lars.
Sorry about that global cooling in San Francisco. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. By the way, we're going to be broadcasting this show 2 days this week live from Capitol Hill as part of an organization and a group called Feet to the Fire, put on by the Federation of American Immigration Reform. It's going to be the largest gathering of talk show hosts in America. 60 of us will gather there, as a number of us have for a decade or better, to do our programs live from Capitol Hill. as a way of sending the message to members of Congress and members of the public that we care about the issues of proper enforcement of America's immigration laws. We've been doing this, as I said, for more than a decade. It's an important broadcast to do. And then on Friday, we will celebrate First Amendment Friday from one of the birthplaces of American freedom, Charlottesville, Virginia, the home of both James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. And we'll do the show with our local affiliate there, WCHV. I want to remind you of something. Some of us have aches and pains as we get older. When I go out and work in the yard for an entire weekend, and that does happen, fire up the chainsaw, get the weed whacker out, and get some work done, I get to the end of the weekend and I wonder what I'm going to feel like on Monday. Well, a lot of that has changed for me because I used to feel beat up on Monday when I came in from a weekend of yard work. Now I don't, because I take Relief Factor every day. It's four little pills, and it's a great way to use a natural response to your body's inflammation. Inflammation is the thing that ends up causing that that aching and, you know, those pains that you get after exercise or overexertion and just plain old everyday living and aging. I'll tell you what, pain affects 100 million Americans. They suffer from ongoing pain every day due to aging, exercise, overexertion, and like I said, just the effects of plain old everyday living. Relief Factor helps exercise-related pain or general muscle aches and pains. Four key ingredients in Relief Factor do the trick. The three-way quick start is $19.95, works out to about 95 cents a day. For pain relief, visit ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com or call 1-800-500-8384, 1-800-500-8384. Let's go first to Pee-wee in Nevada. Hey, Pee-wee, thanks for listening on KTTF. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, first of all, that must be a hell of a jungle you got in your house if you need a chainsaw and a weed whacker.
I'll tell you what, if I didn't have my, and I love steel products, I don't even do ads for them on the air, although I would, but I've got all the tools. I got all the orange tools out there, and it's not quite a jungle. Yeah. It's just that, you know, it's a nice climate I live in the Northwest, and there's a lot of rain, and in the summertime, a lot of sun, and it grows faster than you can cut it back, so you got to get after it. You got to get that two-stroke, you know, fired up and put a little blue smoke in the air to be able to get it done.
But, I know the feeling.
Yeah. So what's on your mind?
Here's the deal. I got a dispute with Juan William and his description of the refugees being women and children. And if he's got different photos from the ones that have been published, all I see are young men fighting age, and that's it. 99% of the photo of crowds, refugee crowds coming through, they're mostly all men.
Well,
and you got to look hard to find the women.
I will tell you this.
Where did Juan get his photos?
I will tell you this. Most of the photos you're talking about are from Europe. And those are people who just poured across their borders. And then finally, some of the European countries began to regain their sanity. I will tell you, in the sense of fairness, I like dealing with facts, logic, and the law. So if you look at fiscal year 2016, so last year where President Obama was president for most of the year before Donald Trump took over in January, the total number they let in, which was the largest number they'd allowed in from Syria in the entire length of the Obama administration, they allowed about 12,000 people to come in. And half of them were male, half of them were female. Now, I've heard people use all kinds of numbers, but I like using real numbers. So 12,000 people admitted to the United States, half male, half female, and a lot of them under the age of 18. So that means that you have a lot of the potentially radicalizable young men coming in from Syria. It isn't most of them. And when I've seen the numbers of 72%, that describes Europe. It does not describe the refugees coming into America. But here's the point I'd make about that, Pee-wee. I'm not worried about 6,000 young men coming into the country. I'm worried about the 10 or 12 of them that are going to turn into radicalized jihadis, and they're going to go out and pick up a knife or pick up a gun. So even if the number of young, you know, radicalized aged males, you know, whether they're, you know, 18 or 16 or 21, the number, the gross number is not that important. And when people say, well, only half of them were male, and a large number of those who are male were under the age of 18, I still find that problematic, because all we need is one, you know, Syed Farouk or Tashfeen, I can't remember which one was the husband and which one was the wife. And if you look at some of the acts of terrorism that have been carried out here in Europe and in the Middle East in Israel, the prime age for that is 18 to 30. And so if you had even a few hundred that were 18 to 30, it isn't the gross numbers that do the damage. It isn't the thousands and thousands. It's whether or not you're letting people in who are going to go radical and go out and murder people in the name of Islam. That's the problem.
Right.
So I don't even like it. I think the folks who are in favor of these, you know, the refugees entering the country, they love it when we go to that gross numbers. You know, what percentage was young men? It doesn't matter the percentage. What matters is the 10 or 12 of them that they're going to go out and get bombs or guns or knives and carry out these kinds of attacks. Yeah, because don't focus on the big numbers, because that's not the problem. If we only had a dozen jihadis a year in the United States, that's enough to end the lives of a couple of hundred Americans, if not more.
Right.
So even if the numbers were very, very small, the key part is to focus on who are these people and how do we find this out? And that's why I asked Juan, how do you find this out? And he said, well, we put them in refugee camps and we monitor them. Well, a good jihadi who's intending to kill a bunch of infidels in America is what kind of behavior do you think he's going to be on while he's in the refugee camp waiting to enter the United States? He's going to be on his best
behavior. He'll be on his best behavior.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the people who like to say, well, this guy that we had locked up in prison for 10 years was a model prisoner. Sure, when he's under a controlled situation, he's a model prisoner. You don't worry about how he behaves behind bars with armed guards. You worry about what happens when he gets out in the general public. Here's the number I like to point out to people, and it comes from a man who's not a friend of Donald Trump, and that's James Comey, the former FBI director. And some of his testimony before Congress a couple of months ago, before he was fired as FBI director, he said that during his 3.5 years tenure, there had been 2,000 either terrorist attacks or terrorist plots that were identified. And out of those 2,000, 300 of them involved refugees from a whole variety of countries, some of them that are on this list and some that are not. Well, that's one person out of six. So out of 2,000 terrorist attacks or attempts, one person in six or one actor in six among those terrorist attacks was a refugee to the United States. And I've offered people that list that I got from Senator Sessions' office back when he was Senator Jeff Sessions, before he became the Attorney General. I've got dozens of people who came in as refugees. They carried out acts of terrorism. They were either indicted or convicted or both of these terrorist acts. And they were refugees. They were people who had been given sanctuary here in the United States. And their thanks for being given sanctuary was to turn around and try to murder Americans. So when you put those numbers in, the gross numbers don't matter. What matters is the 300 people who actually tried to carry out a terrorist attack. So, Pee-wee, I very much appreciate your call. But, folks, when your friends tell you why there are thousands and thousands of refugees and not very many of them turn into terrorists, well, how many terrorists can America handle? How many terrorists do you want? As I said, if we had one terrorist a month carry out an attack somewhere in America, a knife in the neck, a bomb set off, somebody taking a truck and ramming it through a college campus like Ohio State University, one of those a month is too many. Don't worry about the thousands of numbers. Worry about the dozens of jihadis that are concealed in their midst. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The conversation continues at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Lars Larson Show and on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. I've been telling you about the unanimous decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to uphold the temporary travel restriction on several countries, six of them in the Middle East. Byron Henry joins me now, who's an attorney and a constitutional scholar. So did the Supreme Court's decision today, Mr. Henry, did it vindicate Donald Trump by reinstating that travel restriction?
It sure did, almost across the board. And what's interesting is the very narrow part of the injunction that they left in place, basically staying the travel ban only applied to those with connections to the United States, such as students that have been admitted to school or over here, people with jobs or people with family members. And interestingly, that are classes of people that in the second executive order, President Trump had assumed or anticipated that those people might be eligible to have some sort of standing to challenge the order. So he actually provided, his administration provided a waiver provision for these individuals. So these aren't the individuals that the Trump administration were concerned about when they actually entered the executive order in the first place. So as for the people that President Trump was attempting to keep out of the country while they're reviewing their vetting procedures, those individuals will remain banned from entering the country for at least 90 days while they do their internal review of the regulations and vetting procedures. So it's almost a complete vindication of the Trump administration's policy.
And by the way, Mr. Henry, you know, we're all on the watch for fake news these days. I was going to tell you that about 30 minutes ago, the lead item on the Associated Press, which is the wire service that goes into virtually every newsroom in America, their lead story is about a Muslim imam from Hawaii who's wondering to the reporters, will my mom be able to come here to celebrate Eid? And I thought, hold on a second. Your mom is covered under that part of the order that says that because you have family here, you have a personal connection here with people who are sponsoring your travel, in effect. Of course, there's not going to be a problem. But a lot of Americans will go home tonight. They'll be listening on the radio or they'll wake up tomorrow morning to a story that talks about this, you know, poor, sad story about how this imam may not be able to have the visit from his dear mother, during Eid. And you think, hold on, that's one of the specifically excluded cases. That's not going to be covered at all. But the reporters are happy to shovel that out so Americans can say, well, it still sounds unfair because this guy can't bring his mom over here to celebrate a religious holiday. Well, what a bunch of hogwash.
Of course. And what they won't report on are the fact that three district judges, 10 appellate court judges from the Fourth Circuit, and 3 appellate court judges from the Ninth Circuit, which is a total of 16 federal judges in all, their reasoning that they relied on to enjoin President Trump's temporary travel ban was not even mentioned in the 9-0 ruling. They basically got the back of the Supreme Court's hand and said, listen, this is national security. This is the president addressing foreign nationals with no connection to the United States. They didn't talk about Trump's tweets. They didn't talk about the Establishment Clause or religious animus. They didn't talk about the president exceeding his authority. They basically said, these injunctions are way overbroad, and all we're going to do is allow specific parties that have direct connections to the United States, which is not what the executive orders were about in the first place because of the waiver provision we talked about. And of course, a lot of people are reporting on the refugee ruling and basically affirmed the president's stance that he could lower the number to 50,000 refugees when the Ninth Circuit said he didn't have the authority to lower the number. So on almost every box you could check for President Trump's arguments before the Supreme Court, the Trump administration won, and the lower court didn't even get a direct rebuke. The reasoning wasn't even mentioned in their opinion, basically saying we're not going to even hardly comment on their rulings. We're going to tell you what the law is so all these courts can learn to follow it with respect to the president's authority to protect national security.
Mr. Henry, I appreciate you coming on. I know you've got a little bit of a tenuous connection on cell phone, but thank you very much for the time tonight. To your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go first to Jane, who's a naysayer. Jane, we love naysayers on this program. What's your objection today?
Well, I guess my biggest concern is that this travel restriction and how it's politically, stated in the title, why there is no inclusion of Saudi Arabia since, number one, the people who committed 9/11 came here to go to school and were allowed entry, learn to fly planes here in the United States.
One
from
did.
Saudi Arabia.
The one who got caught.
Okay. Actually, a couple of them did.
And you would like to see Saudi on that list as well. I think the reasoning
Absolutely.
Is, well, you see, I think that reasoning's flawed. There are 58 Muslim states that could have been included on that list. They chose the 6 that were the most problematic. And while you're right, that those 19 hijackers, the majority were originally Saudi nationals. That's not where they got radicalized. And I would just merely point out that I don't think we've had a big problem with them. And Saudi is still viewed as an ally of the United States in the war against terror.
Because we get oil from them.
No, you know what? That really isn't it, Jane. You realize that we're about 2 years away from being completely independent in our oil supply. We buy very little from Saudi Arabia. We buy from OPEC to some extent. And Saudi is the biggest of the OPEC nations. But you know that America is at the point where it's supplying almost all of its needs. I think that if we were suddenly cut off from every other part of the world, even Mexico or other countries that supply us with oil, we'd be capable of being self-sufficient. So I don't think it's because of oil. If anything, the Saudis are in trouble over oil right now.
But the bottom line is people who committed the largest
I got the point. I got the point. But here's the problem. Today, where are our problems coming from? Where are the majority of the jihadis coming from? Some of them have been born here in the United States and radicalized here. Some of them have come
Absolutely.
In, as I pointed out, 300 of the 2,000 incidents during James Comey's tenure were refugees, and they're from a whole variety of countries. So if you're going to pick six of them, I would pick the most problematic ones. Iran is problematic because it's a state sponsor of terrorism and because we can't get much good information. Syria is another good example where we can't get much good information to be able to vet these people. So I think including Saudi on the list would not have made sense. It might have made a nice hit back against the terrorist attack 16 years ago, but I don't think that it would have done much as a practical matter because the Saudis are interested in fighting terrorism as well. They don't want it on their own soil, so I think they've got a dog in the fight, whereas the Syrians and the Iranians and folks from Yemen are not as anxious to keep the terrorists out of the United States of America. So I would leave Saudi off the list right now unless they become a problem. Glad to get your phone calls at 866-439-5277. Emails go right to me, talk@LarsLarson.com.